WSHU, the station you know, trust, and count on, is more relevant than ever. I'm Brad Dancer, the general manager here at WSHU. Your support makes it possible for us to deliver what you need, exactly when you need it, wherever you are. With your help, we tell the stories that matter, connecting the facts and uncovering the truths that keep you informed. Thank you for listening and supporting WSHU Public Radio. We're expanding our world together.
This is WSHU's After All Things, with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. A petition to save Bridgeport's candy cane smokestack has racked up a few hundred signatures. A federal court tosses out a lawsuit challenging New York's Native American school mascot ban. Bridgeport City Council still needs to pick a president. Plus, we have the latest from WSHU's Off the Path. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. An online petition to save Bridgeport's so-called candy cane smokestack has garnered more than 200 signatures. WSHU's Molly Ingram has more.
The iconic red and white smokestack is part of the old coal-fired power plant. It's scheduled to be torn down in April of next year as part of a push to redevelop the site in the South End in the next 3 years. But some, including Mayor Joe Ganim, say the city should keep the smokestack as a testament to its industrial history. Others say it should be torn down because it represents a history of environmental pollution and the health issues that came from it. The petition to keep the structure was started by Harrison Gordon, a 22-year-old photographer from Bridgeport. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
A federal court has thrown out a lawsuit challenging New York's ban on Native American mascots. WSHU's Eamon Gallinato reports.
In May, the Massapequa School District teamed up with a Native American organization to sue the state's Board of Regents over its mascot ban. That lawsuit came after the district entered an agreement with the Native American Guardians Association to keep the mascot, the Massapequa Chiefs. The agreement required the district to offer courses about Native American history. They claim the state's mandatory mascot ban negated that agreement and infringed on their constitutional rights. Now, a judge ruled the agreement was, quote, not a contract. The court said NAGA had no authority to grant the district permission of the mascot, as it held no copyright rights over the image. NAGA has until the end of December to amend their complaint. Eamon Gallinato, WSHU News.
The newly elected city council in Bridgeport failed to pick a president at their inaugural meeting on December 1st. A veteran council member says they'll likely pick one at their next meeting. WSHU's Ebong Udama has more.
Ernie Newton was the first African-American to be elected Bridgeport City Council president in the early 1980s.
It was 27 ballots before I actually got 11 votes to win the council seat as president.
Monday's impasse occurred after neither incumbent Idy Nieves nor challenger Janet Herron obtained the 11 votes necessary from the 20-member body because two members voted against both candidates. Newton believes the issue will be resolved at their next meeting on December 15th.
They should have voted for one of the other candidates. I'm sure we will pick a president on the 15th.
Newton had supported Herron on Monday. The third contender in the race is council member Akeem Boyd. He got in after Monday's meeting claiming he'd be a unifying candidate. Ebong Udama, WSHU News.
Some of the oldest images of Jesus came from a Syrian ghost town, and now they're in New Haven. That story is coming up. Vocal support for After All Things comes from Hartford Healthcare. For the second time, all hospitals received A ratings from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent hospital monitor. This means that patients have access to the safest level of care, no matter which hospital they choose.
I'm Suzanne Bona, and I'm the host of Sunday Baroque on WSHU Public Radio. I listen to music when I drive. I listen to all kinds of music. It would probably curl Sunday Baroque listeners' hair to hear the kind of music that I have on my phone and my playlist. But I always listen to music when I drive. It's probably when I listen to the most music, in fact. To donate your car to WSHU Public Radio, just go to WSHU.org.
Defense attorney Norm Pattis has asked a federal judge for permission to withdraw from representing a former Connecticut state official, Costa Diamantis, in his second corruption trial. Pattis says he hasn't been paid legal fees. If approved, the request could delay the trial scheduled for early February. Contract talks have stalled between the MTA and the LIRR as a January 16th strike deadline approaches. Union leaders say the MTA rejected a White House mediation board's recommendation for 14% raises over 4 years. A strike could disrupt service for hundreds of thousands of riders. If you see smoke through December 20th out near eastern Long Island, well, it might be a planned burn. The winter burn window at the Mashamack Preserve on Shelter Island is now in effect. If conditions are met, workers will start a prescribed fire. It's used as a land management tool to promote the health of oak forests. A Nassau County grand jury has indicted a Florida man for killing a woman whose remains were long associated with the Gilgo Beach serial killer investigation. WSHU's Desiree DiOrio explains.
Andrew Dykes of Tampa has been charged with murder for the 1997 killing of Tanya Denise Jackson. Her partial remains were found scattered near Jones Beach and Hempstead Lake over a decade ago. For years, she was known as Jane Doe No. 3, or Peaches, because of a tattoo on her chest. Investigators say Dykes is the biological father of Jackson's toddler-age daughter, Tatiana Marie Dykes. Her remains were discovered near Gilgo Beach in 2011. So far, Dykes has not been charged in the child's death, according to Newsday. Desiree DiOrio, WSHU News.
It's believed that some of the oldest preserved depictions of Jesus Christ are from a town in Syria, abandoned nearly 2,000 years ago. The paintings on a rough stone wall can now be seen at the Yale Art Gallery in New Haven. WSHU's Davis Donovan tells us what made the town where they were discovered special for the series Off the Path.
There's a room tucked away at Yale's Art Gallery. It's dimly lit, very quiet, and it feels strangely reverent.
Something important is happening here.
Yale historian Felicity Harley points to faded paintings on a back wall, deteriorated fragments. Some are amateurish stick figures, some are colorful, but one section is particularly telling. A shepherd with a ram on his shoulders.
With a large flock of what seem to be mostly rams, and this shepherd isn't a random, happy, bucolic landscape dweller. This is the son of the Christian God.
Felicity believes the shepherd is Jesus because of where this painting would have been placed, most likely in a room that served as an early Christian church in someone's house. The centerpiece of the room would have been a baptismal font, a basin where new Christians would be baptized.
The location above the font and in a context where we have other scenes that are identifiably Christian, then we can begin to piece together something about the nature of this community.
One painting shows Jesus healing a paralyzed man in a bathhouse. That's a story from the Gospels. Another shows an even more famous story.
There is the scene of the apostles in the boat with the disciple Peter with Jesus, and they're walking on the water, this miracle.
Now, we're missing the top half of one of these people. That's we know which one is Peter and which is Jesus?
Well, some people debate about that.
Another painting shows the Virgin Mary or a woman Jesus met at a well. We're really not sure. They come from a time when Christianity was still an upstart new faith, one that went dramatically against the Roman state religion. The Gospels were about a century old at this point, and the Apostles' Creed probably hadn't been written yet. But Felicity says this church shows how the early Christians lived.
It gives us a richer sense of the confidence that a small community on the edge of the Roman Empire that was worshiping this new, relatively new Christian God, this confidence that they had in expressing their faith and the underpinnings of that faith.
Archaeologists found the paintings in a city called Dura Europus. It was attacked by a Middle Eastern empire around 250 AD, then abandoned and covered over by the sands of the desert. It lay untouched for millennia until Yale archaeologists rediscovered it in the early 20th century.
One of the other absolute gifts of Dura Europus for historians is the fact of the destruction of the town.
Felicity says the destruction also helped scholars hone in on the age of the house church, since it had to be built before the town was abandoned. Felicity says we also know Christians from Dura Europis thrived in an especially pluralistic society, more so than most places in the Roman Empire that we know about.
They're following the same sorts of patterns and customs that their neighbors are in terms of how they structure a space for worship and use art in that process.
So who were these neighbors? Both Roman pagans and Jews with some really unorthodox iconography. On the next Off the Path, Yale's exhibit reveals the fascinating religious melting pot of Dura Europis. I'm Davis Donovan.
For the latest news from around Long Island Sound, listen on the radio at WSHU.org or with the WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford Healthcare. And if you like what we're doing here with this podcast, or you've been a longtime listener of WSHU, consider supporting the station today with a financial contribution, especially right now with the abrupt end to federal funding. We're grateful for the generosity of listeners like you. Visit our website to learn more or call us at 800-777-974. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day and a wonderful weekend. I'll speak to you on Monday.